Let's start with the injury report. Obviously, that is the biggest news, as the Giants are practicing as we speak. And there were a number of guys that appeared on the injury report yesterday, Paul, but you still have the following players dealing with injuries: Olivier Vernon, Orleans Darkwa, Shane Vereen, Jonathan Casillas, JT Thomas, and the new addition that we learned today is Brett Jones, who is now dealing with a hip injury. Now, DJ Fluker is still very much in the mix, so that's a possibility if Brett Jones can't play, but this was a new injury that nobody necessarily was expecting.
No, in fact, earlier today when we got to the facility, he was not listed on the injury report, and it was only when the media went out to practice that the Giants PR staff said, oh, we have an addition. We didn't have time to type it up. Brett Jones has a hip. Okay. Next man up, DJ Fluker, get your helmet. I mean, it's time. It's time. And, you know, the one thing is, of course, he's more of a size, power, strength, muscle lineman than Brett Jones, who's more of a technician.
And Fluker, they were moving around during the course of training camp, Paul.
No doubt.
So it's not as if this would be throwing him in uncharted territory.
Oh, no. No, not at all.
I would not be alarmed from that perspective.
Not at all.
As far as Bobby Hart was out at practice. We'll wait and see in terms of the amount of participation when the full report comes out later today, but maybe he is inching closer to returning to the field after missing the last few games because of that injury to his leg.
Still to be determined, but certainly if Jones and or Hart are down, now you're talking about Wheeler being the only possible reserve offensive lineman. That's thin.
Well, especially if somebody else gets banged up in the game or it would require another game of musical chairs.
How about this? Who's the backup center?
And we were talking about that during the course of the offseason, that if Brett Jones got banged up, on top of Richburg, who then would you turn to?
And right now, Brett Jones is banged up.
Yeah.
So if Richburg has to come out of the game, who's the center right now?
That's a good question.
We got to find that out.
Yeah.
I would think, I remember when he came out of school, it was expressed to me Justin Pugh could play any
correct
of the five positions on the offensive line, including center. But to my knowledge, he has not taken any snaps at center during practice while he's been a Giant.
Well,
and certainly they need him right now.
I was going to say.
At another position.
You're now telling him to move from right tackle to center under those circumstances, and then I guess you'd have to put Chad Wheeler in at right tackle or Fluker, depending on
folks,
how the alignment would work out.
Just get out your Lucky's rabbit's foot and make sure
yes,
that,
let's
that
hope we don't have to get
nobody,
to that point.
Nobody else becomes unavailable on that line.
Well, the task at hand is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Let's get into the Bucs a little bit before we open up your phone calls at 201-939-4513. Now, this is a Tampa Bay team, Paul, that's coming off of a lopsided loss to the Minnesota Vikings. They've only had two games because their first game was postponed due to Hurricane Irma when they were supposed to play the Miami Dolphins. So the sample size is small. You have one effort against the Bears where they pretty much shut down Chicago and performed admirably on offense. And
yes,
then you have the complete opposite end of the spectrum in terms of what happened against Minnesota, where Jameis Winston was picked off three times. They only ran the ball nine because they went down so early. They lost their balanced attack.
Sound familiar?
Yeah, it does sound very familiar. That's why I'm noting these trends that the Giants are not necessarily the only team in this situation. But on top of that, gave up a lot of big plays, specifically through the air. Granted, this is a defense that has been plagued by injuries in the early start of the season. They were down a lot of starters, and they're expected to get a number of them back. But, you know, this was not the defense I think that most people anticipated from Tampa Bay. There was a lot of hype surrounding this team, a lot of veterans on this team, and Minnesota, with Case Keenum backing up Sam Bradford, was really able to make mashed potatoes out of that secondary.
He threw for almost 370 yards and three touchdowns, had four completions of at least 40 yards. Stephon Diggs had two touchdown catches. Quite frankly, that secondary was shredded like an onion. And they're not very good anyway, but now, since they're banged up, they're even worse. Now, Hargraves last year as a rookie, and so many people were saying the Giants should have taken Hargraves over Apple. Well, funny thing about Hargraves, turns out, last year, Hargraves gave up the most pass completions of any member of the NFL in the secondary, for the most yardage of any player in the NFL in the secondary. It's amazing how he made the all-rookie team. I don't understand that. I think Eli Apple, hands down, should have gotten in over him. But this guy has been torched time and time again, and they're very frustrated with him down in Tampa because he was a number one draft choice, and he's just given up big play after big play after big
play. Which happened last week, too.
Now, Eli Apple's had some trouble with penalties this year. I understand that. But you can't criticize his coverage skills. He's there. He's absolutely there shadowing receivers. There's a big difference between being able to shadow receivers and then not even being in the vicinity, which is what Hargraves is. So they got a lot of problems. They got, banged up front line, banged up linebackers. 78 pass attempts have been thrown against Tampa Bay in the first 2 weeks of the season. They have one sack. That's it. So they're not getting to the quarterback, and they're hurt, and their secondary's a mess. Man, oh, man, oh, man. If you do not go down to Tampa Bay and take care of business, especially after that 24-point fourth quarter that the Giants put up in Philadelphia last week. Or 21 points. It was
24.
It was 24. Yes. It's so far.
It's been a long time.
It's so far in my rearview mirror, I'm not even thinking about it. Come on. Something is really wrong. Really, really wrong.
Well, listen, we've talked about this in the past, though, and that's why I have to throw that out about Giants going up against banged-up teams looking attractive
on
paper, Paul.
Hold on. Did the offense not put up? Eli Manning threw 47 passes last week, and who was the one who told you on the pregame show that the Giants would not give up more sacks than the Eagles? I think I'm the only one who had that right.
That's true.
47 throws against the Eagles, and that vaunted pass rush, zero sacks.
Well, got rid of the football quickly.
Four hits.
To counter that, yeah.
Okay, it was the up-tempo. Mm-hmm. It was the quick release.
Yep.
And what did Eli wind up with, 360 yardage?
I think
was it 360? Was it 380?
Maybe even more than
that. I mean, it was high, okay? It was in the high 300s. And, they got the big plays. They had five drives of a minimum of 45 yards. I mean,
they moved the ball. I don't think anybody's
And don't get me
that.
Wrong, folks. You know me. I still love the power run game. I still wish that they would run the ball more, especially when they're inside the one-yard line. Don't get me started. But the bottom line is they moved the ball. They scored points. Exactly what we knew they could do against that weak, weak Eagles secondary. The question was, could they hold up against the pass rush? They did. So now, got to be able to do it this week.
366, by the way, is what
it
Manning
was.
Threw for.
There you
against
go.
Against the Philadelphia Eagles. But I was listening to Gerald McCoy, and this is related to your point. McCoy, their top defensive tackle for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, was talking to the media. Now the Giants have put on tape a way to counteract the pass rush because of the fact that their offensive line got banged up.
The Bucs don't have a pass rush,
though.
Well,
I wouldn't go that far, Paul. Come on. Granted, the sacks haven't shown up. To say that the Bucs don't have a pass rush, I think it's taken a little too far. There's a team that...
Spence has their one sack.
Noah Spence does have their one sack.
And he had three dislocated shoulders in last week's game.
Oh, he popped it back in place and continued playing.
Great. Brave guy.
Yes.
Love his guts. Not afraid.
The Bucs have some playmakers. I wouldn't generically say
Robert
that
Harris
they have
has
no
a bad
rush.
Knee. He was in and they're, out all they're
last
week.
Up. They're banged up. But to say that they don't have a pass rush, I think would be a little bit too far. There's playmakers there. It's a
Simeon
matter
Rice
of...
Rice isn't playing anymore.
No, he's not.
He's long retired.
Indeed. They are going to get probably Brent Grimes back, though. Let's not overlook that. And he's still playing at a high level, even though he's getting up there in age.
So
he had a really good season last year.
He did.
Really good season.
He did.
That's why he made the Pro Bowl.
I understand that.
All I'm saying is we've got to look at the facts here that the Giants on paper have not necessarily always taken advantage of favorable matchups.
That's true.
And that's what I'm emphasizing here. They did. But,
finally.
But most people would argue it took them three quarters to do that before the movement of the ball translated to points, Paul.
Well, yeah, because they
it
did.
It was not for an entire four quarter.
They had a good second quarter drive. They also moved the ball well in the third quarter. But ultimately, they did not finish off with points.
And that's
remember,
all that
they,
matters.
They
at
turned
the end of
it
the
over
day.
On fourth down twice.
Of course.
We could, again, we could, no, I don't want to look back at that anymore.
Well, we don't have to play history backwards, but moving forward, I think it's fair to say that, yes, the Giants moved the ball last week much more so than they did in the first two games.
Like they should.
Nobody's denying that. But then the question is, will the consistency show up this week, Paul, in terms of moving the ball and then punching it into the end zone? That's the question that I think is fair to say it's still out there and the jury is still out. because they haven't put together that complete game yet in three contests where you say they've moved the ball and it's translated to points. We've seen flashes of moving the ball. We've seen a big outburst in one quarter of play in which they've outscored themselves in any other quarter. But we have yet to see four quarters where they're constantly solving the opposition and they're constantly putting points on the board.
What they have outside of the, let's see, was it two, three and outs outside of the one drive where they had the turnover?
In terms of last week's game against the Eagles? Not
What I'm saying is, it seems as though they've corrected a lot of the issues from the first two games. That's what I'm saying. Offensively, when you look at the amount of big plays, you look at the amount of drives over 40 yards, you look at the number of three and outs, you look at all of these things and you say, well, okay, they fixed a lot of them. Now, what they still haven't fixed, all right, they fixed the sack trouble. What they still haven't fixed is they haven't really run the ball. They haven't run the ball actually worth a damn. That's what they still haven't fixed. Okay? Now, if DJ Fluker has to play and you've got 700 pounds of beef on the left side between Flowers and Fluker, Lance, you could probably run the ball behind those two guys. I mean, if those two guys are lining up on the left side, I do not want to be standing anywhere on that surface down in Tampa Bay at 7:30 at night wondering how the Giants ran for 25 yards. No, I will not accept that. I mean, come on. That kind of beef?
On paper, it's certainly favorable. I agree. But you know what? I'm at the point, Paul, where you got to see it before you believe it.
You do.
We're talking about three games. We're talking about some favorable matchups.
And Darkwa's got a sore back, too. So if they're going to run it.
And Darkwa's been their most consistent rusher.
I know.
Their most successful rusher.
So if they're going to run it, and Vereen's sore as well. I think it was an ankle.
I think Vereen's, that he is dealing with an
Vereen's,
ankle.
Vereen's sore. So here's the thing. If they're going to do it.
Calf injury for Vereen, by the way.
Okay. If they're going to do it, you know, it may have to be Perkins. It may have to be Gallman.
Gallman may have his opportunity this
week. Yeah. May have to be. But do it. Just do it.
Well, getting the running game going or getting the running backs involved in the passing game to help move the football would certainly be a positive, especially if you're the Giants, and we'll go along with the narrative that you pointed out that this is a banged-up crew. Their linebackers are backed up. You know, forget the secondary. How about the fact that Tampa Bay may be without, well, we know they're going to be without Lavonte David, who's one of their most mobile linebackers. They could very well be without Quan Alexander.
Hammy.
Quan Alexander still has a chance. We have to wait to see the injury report, whether he practices tomorrow or today, perhaps. He was out yesterday. He left the two games ago and then did not play the previous contest against the Vikings. And believe it or not, interesting note, they're 0-5 when Quan Alexander doesn't play over the course of his career.
He missed
four games his rookie year. He played all 16 last year, and then he just missed the game last week. But the point at hand is Quan Alexander and Lavonte David are by far their most mobile linebackers.
No question.
The matchup that you could take advantage of is the middle of the field and the running backs to perhaps try to get out into some open space.
And McCoy's dealing with an ankle injury, so he's not 100%, so I don't expect him to play at a high level. He'll play.
He'll play, though, yeah.
But he's not going to be his typical disruptive self.
It's fair.
Robert Ayers, again, he's dealing with a sore knee. Chris Baker's coming off the flu. We know about him from his time in Washington.
And then they're going to get Jaquie Smith back, too, who is a rotating defensive end who did start. He was also dealing with an illness. Him and Chris Baker were not hurt. They just were not fully healthy.
Again, what does paper mean? Paper means nothing. The Giants are 0-3.
Yeah.
That's a fact. So paper means nothing. But on paper, you have to feel like, even despite the nicks that the Giants have, you have to feel like you can go down there and do business. You have to believe that.
Well, especially after you look at what Case Keenum and the Vikings did. And Case now we're Keenum. Talking about Eli Manning and the Giants and just as much firepower as Minnesota. It's not like Eli Manning doesn't have targets
say. More firepower than Minnesota. Diggs is their guy. Let's face it. He's their guy.
Adam Thielen, I think, deserves credit. He's come
a long
way.
Not a bad player,
no,
but
I agree with you. I'm not trying to defend the Vikings.
Did you see Sterling Shepard last
week? The Giants certainly have much more firepower, but, I mean, it's not like the Vikings were throwing out a bunch of unknown commodities.
No.
Those guys have proven over the last two seasons that they can make plays. And Dalvin Cook, over his rookie campaign thus far, three games, has also been
extremely dynamic. Although it wasn't him so much that killed the Bucs as much as it was Keenum last week.
It was the air, but Cook actually got a number of receptions.
He did.
And did a lot of damage through the air as opposed to what he did on the ground.
Which is really why I'd like to see Vereen be available.
could be an added bonus. All right, let's open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Your thoughts on the Bucks game, your thoughts on the Giants season thus far. Marco's in Connecticut. He gets us going. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul.
Hi.
How are you?
Doing well, Marco. What do you got for us?
Couple questions. I want to talk about the some of the free agent guys that were brought in, and then some of the guys like an undrafted free agent that made the team. I'm curious, guys, when they were setting up this roster, I think you know what I'm getting at. But when they were setting up the roster, why was there a fullback put on the team this year? What's your take on that?
Well, you're alluding to the fact, before we go anywhere else, that Shane Smith has played, I believe, 7% of the plays so far.
Very small.
Correct.
And to be honest with you, Coach McAdoo has said that he's been in the game plan, and then circumstances did not dictate his usage during the course of the games. I don't need to tell you how I feel about power football, especially about running the ball and having that extra power blocker in the formation. I said last week going into Philly, I would have had either a fullback or the blocking tight end, Engram, one of the two, at least, on the field for every single play. As it turned out, they got fancy with their schematics, and they didn't need to do that. But I understand your point. And you're not going to get me fighting you on this one, because I think the Giants need to make better use of Shane Smith.
No fighting, because we're on the same page. I'm a frustrated fan that's watching. I've gone back and I've tried to give, and I still do give McAdoo the benefit of the doubt. I mean, when it's within the game, and just the game is going a certain way, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt of the ebbs and flows in the game determined on personnel and decisions. And then once we come back and we Monday morning quarterback it's not as easy to just sit back and say, oh, the fullback should have played more.
Sure.
But I've thought about Green Bay personnel. I've thought about the West Coast offense, John Kuhn being a really big part in the Green Bay offense when he was there. And the situational football that took place on Sunday, where there was some short yardage.
Yep.
I keep saying to myself, I want him on the, like, full disclosure, I want them to play with a fullback when they can. I don't understand why he's not being used, which kind of leads me into my thought process here. I'm thinking today, I'm like, is there a disconnect with personnel and coaching that did not exist when Coach Coughlin was here? And the reason I say that is Brandon Marshall, Rhett Ellison, Shane Smith, DJ Fluker are all players that years ago when Coughlin was here, he would have utilized those type of players, big play, big body wide receiver, a fullback, a big mammoth offensive tackle, the blocking tight end like Ellison that's so talented. I'm like, this is exactly what the Giants fans have wanted that we haven't been getting from the offense. And the Giants spent a lot of money getting Ellison. I heard this, and Paul and Lance, I think you guys have heard this before. You know, a lot of Vikings people, when Ellison left, they said that the Giants came in and literally took away one of their best players
that's
on their
true.
Team. And that's saying a lot. That's saying a lot about the Vikings.
Sure it is.
Well, he's a key blocker. They didn't overlook that.
So Paul, I listen to you guys every day. I've talked to you guys all the time. Fluker, Paul, you said, had a look in his eye like this guy was going to have a bounce-back year. I don't know. It's something not adding up. Even Marshall, I was expecting some serious leadership from Marshall, given that it was his – he made a statement before the year that he had a two-year contract, and it was almost looking at this like it was a last stop. I'm not going to put on Marshall what happened last week with Beckham, but – it's like my expectations are not being met with these guys, and I don't feel like they're necessarily getting a shot. It's not like we're seeing Ellison go out there and he's missing assignments, or maybe I'm not seeing that.
Well, Marco, let me just jump in. Yeah. In fairness, there was a play against the Cowboys, you know, and we're not here to single out every player. Listen, every player has a mistake at one point, but I mean, I did see Red Ellison try to block Sean Lee, and Sean Lee went right past him and made a significant play. So to say that when these guys have been on the field that there's been 100% execution, I wouldn't go that far. I think it's a fair point you made with respect to Shane Smith and Red Ellison. As far as Marshall is concerned, you know, Marshall wasn't targeted a whole lot in the first game. Marshall has been targeted in the last two games. And in fairness, you know, he hasn't necessarily executed to perfection every time the ball has gone his way. Not necessarily in the Lions game, I would say, much more so than in the last game against the Eagles. So I think there's mixed results for the four players that you threw out. I mean, Fluker's really the only guy that really has not seen anything because he just hasn't been given the playing time.
See, I'm going to go to a related topic here. Do you know the Giants have only run a double tight end set on 17% of their plays? Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So it's not just that Shane Smith is barely being used. But even a double tight end set where you have Ellison and Ingram on the field at the same time, 17% of the plays. I can't explain it other than that style of football apparently is not in the scope of the system that Coach Ben McAdoo is comfortable with. He still seems to really favor using the three wides and you know, giving him all kinds of looks like that. And, you know, until he decides, he's the coach, he has the right to do that. We don't have the right to do that.
No.
Until he
no.
decides he's going to pull that third receiver off the field more, you're not going to see it.
Paul, I'm going to make a quick point, and then I'll jump off because I know you guys have other callers. But to that, the offense, and I'm happy I got you on the phone today because the offense struggled last year. And I've heard you say, don't make a correlation between anything that stretches over from last year mm-hmm. to this year. However, there's repeat problems going on. That's the frustration. That's what fans were booing in Detroit on their first three and out because it's a frustration that comes from last year. Last year, ready? This is going to be quick. Last year, no Will Johnson. We heard about it. Will Johnson going to be a big part of the offense. No fullback, right? Nikita Whitlock, not on the roster. Offensive line was struggling, and we not a huge part, but we talked about that we had smaller wide receivers. So what do we have this year? We have a bigger wide receiver, Marshall. We have offensive line as a help in Fluker. We get our Will Johnson clone, if not better, in Ellison, and we have a fullback on the roster, and it's the same.
See, and that's why, Marco, I think we're splitting hairs here, but here is my problem. I don't think you can compare the situations across the offseason because the personnel is different. Now, what you can complain about, if you wish, and I have no problem with this because it's a fact, they've got the blocking tight end, and they're still not using a double tight end formation very much.
That's my point.
Yeah, they've got the fullback, and they're still not using him. For all practical purposes, Shane Smith might as well not be here because he's barely been used. So if you want to say that there is a consistent philosophy of player deployment that seems to be misguided or seems to be having a lot of difficulty and trouble, I'm all for understanding that. But I will not say that it's on the players and that these are the same players and this is the same problem that they had last year. It's not on the players.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's not on the players. If anything, the roster was enhanced from last year.
Yes, the player deployment is what the commonality is between the two years.
That's what it is. Appreciate the phone call. Well, I think what you're pointing to, Paul, is the fullback wasn't utilized last season because the fullback wasn't on the roster. Fullback's on the roster this year, but the fullback's still not being utilized.
That's what I mean.
So the comparison is apples to apples in terms of the fullback not being a big part of the offense.
And double tight end.
Yeah.
Again, not being a very significant part of the offense. And they've got the pieces now to change that, and they're not doing it. So to me, the player deployment component is It's consistent, and it's what resembles the problems from last year. I don't want to hear people saying that, same guys. No, it's not the same guys. This is a different group of guys. And I don't like when people are pointing fingers at those guys because it's just not the same group. It's unfair.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Adam's in Columbus. Adam, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. How you guys doing?
Doing all right, Adam. What do you got for us?
I got a couple points, but before I get to that, I wanted to throw something out there to the fan base following. About 3 months ago, I bought three tickets to this game. My girlfriend and I will be on a plane at this time tomorrow going down to Tampa Bay.
Okay.
I have a cousin in Florida who is going to meet us, but because of the hurricane, he can't go.
Sorry.
I got one extra seat. It's a darn good seat. I don't want any money for it. So if anybody out there is listening, I'd like to give it to a Giants fan.
Wow.
I'd be happy to cough it up for you.
Here's the only thing I can say. This is Big Blue Kickoff Live, not the NFL Ticket Exchange. but I'm sure, through Twitter and all kinds of other social media,
yeah.
Facebook and everything else, Instagram, I'm sure you're not going to have problems finding somebody.
Well, let's hope not, because I hate for it to go to waste. But I made that point, so I'll keep it moving, guys. You stole some of my thunder in your intro about the Vernon Hargraves issue. You know, you assume Brent Grimes will follow Odell Beckham. One thing about Hargraves that sticks out to me is you assume he'll be across from Marshall at some point. He's only like 5'9". I think he's listed at 5'10". That's a little generous.
And he has given up a lot of space to receivers. If you watch the tape, he is not. He doesn't plaster guys at all.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing if we can exploit that. There was a play against Philadelphia. It was on the first drive. I think it was like the second series where it was a draw left to Perkins. And I thought it was blocked really well, hat on hat, multiple lanes right or left. I think it was either Pugh or Flowers or whoever was lined up at left guard or Flowers had a nice block, a nice commitment to the guy across from him. And the guy was able to basically arm tackle it. It was Perkins in what should have been a broken tackle, I thought. And I just remember thinking, Darkwa breaks that tackle. You know, Darkwa takes that for probably 6 to 8 yards instead of 1 to 2. We don't get a lot of nicely blocked plays out of this line, for better or worse. We've got to make better use of them when they do. And it just made me think, is Darkwa's load going to keep steadily increasing like it has? I think he's our guy.
Well, he's got to be healthy, number one, Adam. Let's not overlook that. I mean, right now he's dealing with the back injury. He's been, you know, not apparent at practice in terms of being heavily involved. So I would hesitate to say that he is going to increase his load until we see whether or not he can fully get out there. I would agree with you. I think when Darkwa's been out there, there has been just a little bit more spark in the running game, even though it's far and few. He's had the 20-yard run last week, which coincided with some of the big plays down the field. So he has been productive. He's taken advantage. With that being said, I mean, he only did average 3 yards a carry on his 7 carries, and the 20-yard run was accounting for just about the bulk of his 22 yards. So I think you also need to take a step back and put things in perspective, but I don't think it should be overlooked that Darkwa has been effective for the limited runs, but until he's fully healthy, it's hard to say whether or not his role is going to increase.
Yeah, I agree, but I think that stat gets a little skewed and misleading also because of the fourth and goal. Even if he makes that, he only gets a, you know, 5/10 of a yard towards the stat line, not to mention the toss left that hurt him pretty bad. So 1 or 2 hits behind the line of scrimmage, but I think all in all, consistently and in the big picture, he's a more productive guy. But, yeah, obviously it goes without saying he's got to be healthy.
Want to refer to the play you're talking about because I just called it up on my computer, and in watching it from the end zone shot, there was backside pursuit by the Eagles defensive lineman Jernigan. And to be quite honest with you, I appreciate what you saw from the sideline. But when you look at it from the end zone shot, what you see is that when the angle was taken by the defensive lineman, Perkins truly had no cutback lane to go to. And that's why it looked like it was a simple arm tackle that brought him down. The fact was there was too much traffic there, and by the time he had already approached the line and the traffic converged on him, he would have had a back step to try to get back and find himself room to take the cutback. So I get what you're saying and what it looked like, but I don't really necessarily know that at that point in time when he was going to make the jump cut, there would have been enough room for him to get away is what I'm saying. He would have anticipated Jernigan slicing through earlier and then made the jump cut. As Jernigan was making the slice, he could have cut behind him, and he would have had plenty of room. But you don't anticipate that the D lineman is going to have penetration that quickly.
And, Adam, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in here. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. How about Bash in Ohio? Bash, what's happening?
How are you doing, Lance? What's going on, Paul?
Hi.
All right, Bash. What do you got for us?
I'm going to talk about two things. I know, Lance, you're not really actually going to agree with what I'm going to say, but I want to talk more and ask both of you all as far as roster change, as far as this offensive line. Y'all know I really don't talk about the offensive line, but 3 weeks to the thing, 0-3 and Flowers and Jerry just not cutting. I was asking as far as how do y'all think Wheeler has looked and Wheeler has looked as far as practice. I know y'all don't see the practice or anything as far as this process through training camp and now 3 weeks into the season as far as Wheeler actually coming in as far as taking over the left tackle spot and as far as Luka coming in for John Jerry. Are they going to make that transition? Because Luka hasn't got any snaps, any play as far as first 3 weeks. So any change in roster as far as Luka and Wheeler. Even with Wheeler, I know Flowers is the best option, but as far as if Flowers play a bad first half, do you see nobody making a change at half and just letting Wheeler play a second half and see how he look out there? And if he's not cutting it, then just go back to Flowers. So it won't be like a whole change as far as fitting Flowers for Wheeler and stuff as far as like a second half change if Flowers not cutting it in the first half of this Tampa game.
Well, personally, I don't see Wheeler replacing Flowers during the course of a game. I mean, no. Like you said, we don't see practice, but, I mean, if the coaching staff saw enough out of Wheeler, you know, you would at least have seen a change by now. So, Paul, I don't anticipate that happening.
Here's the other thing you have to keep in mind, and I appreciate that you want to try to get creative, but if the Giants are going to Tampa, and, again, we don't know the extent of these injuries on this injury report as we stand here today on Thursday, but depending upon how severe these are, there's a chance they're going to Tampa with six healthy offensive linemen. And Wheeler may be the only substitute that they have. You're not going to be fussing around at the lineup when you only have six guys.
Unless.
Because there you have no flexibility.
Well, the only other thing that I'll throw out is, and remember, roster moves can happen between now and the game. Adam Biznavati is on the practice squad. It's possible they could make a transaction and move him up to give themselves an extra offensive lineman.
To do that, you'd have to believe that someone is serious enough, though, that it's not just even a one-week thing.
True.
You would
Absolutely.
Think.
Well, I mean, listen, with this Brett Jones injury coming out of what seemed like nowhere, who knows?
Know.
I mean, we don't want to speculate, but, I mean, when you have this injury pop up on a Thursday and you didn't hear about it after the game, I mean,
Look,
that at least draws some
questions.
Here's
the good news. 2 weeks ago, Fluker was dealing with a sore leg and had to be held out of a game. You know, he wasn't active.
Yeah.
At least he's over that now, and he's practicing so that he is an able body that can play against the Buccaneers. I mean, that's the good news. Imagine if he was down, where would you go now?
Yeah, I mean, well,
you'd have to have Biznavati.
Well, I was going to say, then you'd have to use two tight ends, to your point. I think the snap count would go up under those circumstances. But getting back to your main point at hand, Bash, I mean, if anything, I think it's more likely that Fluker would get an opportunity because of an injury as opposed to Wheeler replacing a guy because he's not necessarily performing at a high level.
Okay, yeah, I didn't hear the intro. As far as y'all talking about Brett Jones got an injury, because I didn't catch the intro. So you said it was 6-26-5 and Brett Jones has an injury?
Hip injury, yes.
A reported injury?
We're hoping to find out more later on today.
Yeah.
Okay, and the second question I had, I wanted to talk as far as Paul, as far as I know you watch the tape and watch the film a lot. I wanted to ask about this defensive, as far as this run defense, as far as we got the top three run defense last year. In the first three games, we're giving up over 130 a game as far as this run defense. And we have basically the same personnel from last year, minus two people, minus Big Hanks in the middle linebacker. I mean,
all right.
What do you see from watching the tape as far as his run
I'm
defense?
I'm glad you asked because I'm hearing a lot of people freak out over this. First of all, they gave up 30-something, I think it was about 30 scrambling yards to Stafford in week one. See, I'm one, when I talk about rush defense, I don't look at scrambling yards by quarterbacks, okay, because those are passing run yards. Those are not typical rushing yards, okay? Those are rushing yards out of a pass formation. Big difference. So when you talk about their run defense, first of all, Stafford had some scrambling yards. Abdullah had a 34-yard
right at the
end of
the game against the Lions
in garbage time that meant absolutely nothing. All right, you could take those numbers off the board. All right, if you really want to pick this apart.
And then Wentz had 22 yards of scrambling.
Had 22 yards of scrambling, but let's not ignore that in Philadelphia there were two black marks on the Giants' rush defense that did concern me, that I did not see in the first 2 weeks. A, Philadelphia did a terrific job of running against the blitz. I thought it was masterful that Peterson gouged the Giants' blitz because when they were sending extra guys and then the running back got that initial penetration through the first line of defense, all of a sudden now the Giants were caught because they're sending all this pressure and now he gets the little crease, he gets the little hole, and he's got a 6-yard run. That was very, very bad. Second thing, the Eagles ran extremely well against the Giants' sub-package. Giants were going into their nickel. They got their nickel. They got their dime going. They're playing pass. They figure they got the Eagles where they want them. And all of a sudden, guess what? And I don't know if it was Wentz. I don't know if it was Peterson. But they're calling run plays. And the Giants had a bunch of missed tackles. And they left they had a lot of poor gap control issues in their sub package. Now, I don't want to say that Calvin Munson is the culprit here. I don't. But I do want to say that B.J. Goodson did a heck of a job in week one against Dallas when he had 18 combined tackles. And, again, it's dangerous to start pointing fingers, and I'm not going to do that. But I will say that B.J. Goodson, what we know about him so far, is that he is a run stopper, he is a thumper, and he does seem to hold the line pretty well between the tackles. I'd like to believe that if he was playing against Philadelphia, the Eagles would not have run for nearly as many yards. I'd like to believe that.
I mean, Dallas, in fairness, did run the ball effectively in week one. They didn't kill them like maybe the last two, but they still were effective, and Goodson was on the field.
But they had more what they call leaky yardage, where Elliott did a terrific job of yards after
initial contact.
And
correct.
He would just keep nudging forward and munch out a few extra yards.
Paul,
and that adds up over the course of the night.
But to your point, I would argue that's been an issue, though, in the last two games since, the leaky yardage. Even the players have pointed that out. Jonathan Casillas has said he feels that's been a trend. And LeGarrette Blount and Wendell Smallwood were taking guys with them. They were taking guys with them, if you go back.
See, for me, Elliott was more drag 'em yardage. This was more gap control and missed tackle yardage.
I felt Blount was taking guys with him too.
Well, Blount's a strong power back, and that's exactly why I wanted him on the Giants, to be honest with you, when he was a free agent.
Well, now you could argue and appreciate the phone call, Ben.
Thank
Tampa
you.
Bay. If you're going to now look to see whether or not the trend will continue. Doug Martin still has to serve one more game because of the first game that was postponed, so he's not playing. So they don't necessarily have a big, humongous back like LeGarrette Blount, but they've got guys that can move like Amir Abdullah and Theo Riddick. In terms of Jaquizz Rodgers, they have Peyton Barber. So they're going to throw a variety of guys the way the Giants, like the Eagles, did. The only thing that Tampa Bay doesn't have that Philly had is Philly had LeGarrette Blount. But
yes,
even if you take away the scrambling yards from Stafford, you take away some of the scrambling yards from Wentz, and you want to remove that Abdullah 30-yard run, the Giants are dead last in the NFL. They're giving up over 150 yards per game. I know Bash threw out over 130. No, it's over 150 per game. So even if you do the math, Paul, that's still a defense that's giving up well over 100 yards per game.
You love to say all the time it's a small sample size.
It is, and I even pointed that out on Twitter.
People who are getting caught up on this are so misdirected.
I don't disagree with a word you just said. It is an extremely small sample size, and I'm always one to point that out. But I think it is fair to say that there have been some similar trends, some similar issues to your point in terms of why they're having trouble against the run. It's a variety of issues, but also some similarities that I'm seeing game to game, regardless of what personnel's been on the field. And that you want to see change, even if it's a small sample size. Because that goes back to discipline, Paul. Your point, that's discipline.
Again,
is that not?
Gap control's not been good, and there's been too many missed tackles. I'm not going to disagree with that. But again, it was more last week that bothered me. I was not so much concerned about the first 2 weeks. Really, I wasn't. That did not alarm me. What alarmed me was last week.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Lance Metal, Paul Dottino with you here. Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Looking ahead to the Bucks game, going over the injury report. Vic is in Florida. Vic, what's happening?
Hey, Paul and Lance, good afternoon. Listen, I've been trying to call you all week just to tell you about last week's game, okay?
Before you do that, we didn't hear from you for a while. How'd you survive the hurricane?
I did okay.
Well, that's good to hear.
My house is down, but I did okay.
Oh my goodness! Well, I hope you bounce back quickly.
No problem. Listen, Paul.
I have to ask you one thing. Yeah, sure.
Last Sunday, now, to me, that loss was a bad coaching loss, okay? Now, he knows. I mean, the coach knows that his offensive line is not the best, particularly for the run. So why, in fact, do you want to go for a fourth, you know, in two or one, rather than take the sure field goal? Now, can you answer me that?
Which fourth down are you talking about? There were two that they failed to convert.
I think he's referring to the Darkwell one, right? Right before the end of the half?
Actually, I refer to both of them.
Okay, so the Shepherd one, the incompletion to Shepherd on fourth and two, and then on fourth and one from the goal line, Darkwell being stopped.
At the end of the first half, when Shepherd was reviewed and then said not to have scored the touchdown, and then, of course, on third down, he had the ball that he dropped out of bounds. And then on fourth down, they handed the ball off to Darkwa in the backfield and got slammed for a loss. I will tell you, Vic, I was 1,000% behind the Giants going for that and thought that it was critical that they score that touchdown. That you couldn't have paid me $1 million to kick a field goal there. Now, did I necessarily like the plays or the execution? I'm not going to say that. Absolutely, I'm not going to say that. But do I agree with the decision to go for the touchdown? 1,000%.
Well, you see, Paul, that's where we differ, okay?
That's fine.
I would rather take the 6 points because, in fact, were 2 field goals that they could have possibly had, and we would have won the game
well,
by
but,
3.
But Vic, here's where I'm going to step in.
Game plays out differently
exactly.
If they score.
I wholeheartedly agree with Paul. You can't do the basic math where you take the 6 points, you lost by 3, and now you win by 3. You can't use that logic because if the Giants now have 6 additional points, the Eagles are not going for the 46-yard field goal with Jake Elliott to try to tie the game late. All of a sudden, their philosophy changes, and maybe they're different play calling and different aggressive approach. So I disagree completely with your logic that it's simply you take the 6 points and you win that game.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, but I would have to say, listen, if I knew that I had a good running offensive line, then I would have to say, yes, I agree with you. But knowing the fact that that line did protect Eli well, but couldn't run the ball. So you go on fourth and two or fourth and one? No, I wouldn't. I'm sorry. You know, thank you for your time, and I'll call you some other time.
Vic, hold on. Before you go, I saw the tattoo photo that you sent me in the mail and the program and the old newspaper clip, newspaper. I have sent that back to you because you should keep that stuff. That stuff you should enjoy for many years to come. So I've sent it back to you. I hope you get it, that your post office is still able to deliver you mail. And I do wish you well. I do wish you well.
Like I said, I can't agree with you on last week's loss. To me, that was bad coaching, period.
All right, Vic.
Have a nice day, weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate the call, Vic.
I will say this. At the time of the second fourth down attempt in the third quarter,
it was, 13 yards out, I think they were, and it was a
fourth and two? Well, fourth and two from the 13.
13, yeah.
With 1.5 minutes to go, and they're down 14-0. Now, here's the problem. Because they had to chase the failed fourth down right before the end of the half, and they were still down 14-0, I totally understand why he felt he had to try to get that first down. And the Giants, again, they had moved the ball from their own 24 all the way to the Philadelphia 13. I mean, they had something going. There was some momentum. There was some offensive progress. And the day wasn't going all that well. You got to take advantage of it. I'm more adamant about going for it at the end of the first half. I think when I feel so strongly about that one and they failed, you kind of have to couple them together. They were chasing that failed attempt by going for the second fourth down. So in light of our explanation that you can't just tack those points on because it does change the flow of the game and the kind
of
defense the Eagles would be playing as
well. You can't overlook that.
I'm going to say drop the argument. I'm not going there. I don't want to hear about how they should have gone for 2 field goals. I'm going to support. I'm not going to second guess. I'm going to tell you how I felt at the time. I thought they should have gone for them.
Well, I'm with you. I said that on Monday's show. I would lean towards those who want to make the point. I get your philosophy, but those that want to make the point, fourth and two from the 13, at this point, get the donut off the board, take the points, especially since you're at the 13.
That's the easier of the two to go for as a field goal.
Correct. That's why I would say, you know what? If people want to say, take the 3 points there, I'll hear them out. I won't hear them out fourth and goal at the one. I'm sorry. I won't
How
hear
about
you
the four-inch line? It wasn't
yeah,
even
I mean,
a one.
It wasn't even, well, I'm going based on what's truly marked down. But, yes, if you really want to be technical, the inch mark. And as I always say this, Paul, I don't care what you say about the offensive line. It's not asking an offensive line much to go a few inches into the end zone, is it?
No.
So I have no problem with that philosophy of trying to punch it in there.
I think the shadow of the nose of the ball was actually touching the goal line. It was that close.
Yeah.
And they failed.
And knowing also you have the ball to start the third quarter. Let's not forget about
that.
No
question.
That's part of the rationale as to why they went
for
it.
No question. And you know, I will also say this. The rule, and once again, I've stated this a billion times in the last decade, the rule makes no sense at all. If a running back breaks the plane to the goal line,
oh, you're talking about
the play
the catch.
Is
okay,
called dead. It's a touchdown, and it doesn't matter if you slap it out of my hands or not. I
yes.
broke the plane to the goal line, blow the whistle, touchdown. But a receiver catches the ball, has possession, has 2 feet in bounds. Oh, suddenly it's not a dead ball. It's not a touchdown. We have to wait till he falls out of bounds about 5 feet. Oh, he dropped the ball. Are you serious? The rule was called correctly.
It was the right call. It was.
It is an absolutely backwards rule that makes absolutely no sense and is totally inconsistent with a goal line play. Totally inconsistent.
And that's a different conversation and a different argument. But,
this is
that
not
say,
the first time it's happened.
No, it's
I've
not.
Seen this happen
and,
several
and
times in the last decade. It is totally inconsistent and makes zero sense. I love the game. I want the game to be as clean and as crystal pure as it can possibly be. And when I see inconsistent rules like this, it infuriates me because it makes zero sense.
Well, what you're alluding to is the difference in how a runner is treated versus a wide receiver. And that is factually backed up based on the rule book. But for those who still want to sit here and say that the league or the officials interpreted the rule wrong, I completely disagree with them. And I don't think they have any facts to support that. Because the rule was applied correctly.
Absolutely.
It may be a bad rule that people want to argue.
And that's
But it was enforced correctly.
It's a horrible rule, and it has taken away so many scores over the last decade for sure. As this what is and what is not a catch has become more and more magnified.
Yep.
I have seen so many of these taken away from so many teams over the years. It's like, will somebody wake up and make the rules consistent? It's ridiculous how you're treating that receiver differently than a running back. It's ridiculous. Even a receiver who catches the ball at the 5-yard line, he reaches across. Boom, touchdown, whistle blows, play dead, touchdown. What, are you kidding me? Makes no sense.
All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Antonio is in Philly. Antonio, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing all right, Antonio. What do you got for us?
A couple of points I'd like to make. First of all, Eli, he played a good game on Sunday.
Sure did.
Yes, he did. And another point I want to make, Paul Perkins, he is not your atypical Giants running back. And what I mean by that, if you look at the Giants running backs, Rodney Hampton, Ron Bay, Jared Bunch, David Wilson, Tiki, those guys were small too, but they ran big. Paul Perkins, he doesn't run big. He gets tackles very easily.
Well, he's shifty, he's got quicks, he's got moves. He's more like David Meggett than any other Giants running back of the
good,
last 30 years.
I would say he is a David-type Meggett, but he doesn't have David Meggett, you know, mindset is like, you're not going to stop me, you're not going to tackle me, I'm going to push forward.
Meggett was a little feisty firecracker.
Yeah.
He really was.
Yes, yes. My third point is McAdoo, I think he made one mistake, and this was during the off season. He shouldn't have anointed Perkins the starting running back in the offseason. He should have treated it the same way as he treated the kickers. Let it be an open competition. At the end of preseason, then you decide who your starting running back is.
Well, now, let me just ask you one question, and I'm not trying to be a wise guy.
Okay.
But not knowing exactly what you were going to get from your offensive line, okay? They needed to figure that out. They were hopeful. They were optimistic, but they weren't sure. So needing to sort out the offensive line at the same time as trying to sort out your running back situation, that is a quandary. That is a mud pie that you really don't want to step through.
Well, to your, I understand what you're bringing up, but my counter to what you're pointing to, Antonio, who's from preventing a head coach in week two to change his mind and go with a different running back? There's no rule.
That too.
There's no rule in the NFL that says just because you name a starter before the season that you can't change your mind in week
two. Nothing's automatic.
To me, it's irrelevant on whether or not he named the starter in July or he named the starter in September.
But I do think that part of his process was, and he's never really given us a detailed reason as to why he did it. But I would suspect part of his process was, I don't want to have to sort through that too. Let me just deal trying to get this offensive line going and let everybody know that, okay, this is the running back we're going to use. That's one less thing I got to deal with. I suspect that was part of it, but I don't know.
Okay, another point is, we have fullbacks. Why don't we ever use them, especially in that fourth down? I would expect him to see that fullback at the goal line. And if, like, for example, if the fullback was there and Dakwa saw for some reason, okay, I can't run up the middle, let me cut it to the outside, because by the time he got the ball, he would have seen from the fullback, all right, this hole is completely stopped. I can't go jump over or whatever. Maybe try to cut it to the left or to the right.
Well,
but for some reason, no fullback.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that point, Antonio. We're going to let you go because we want to get to a few more calls. Ben McAdoo, first of all, said he wants that call back. He said that on the conference call. That's important to note. He was also asked why there wasn't a fullback on that play, and he claimed that there really wasn't a lot of space to operate, and he felt that they didn't take advantage of better angles on that play. But to the point that Antonio's bringing up, Paul, let's say a fullback's in there. Okay, so let's say Shane Smith is in front of Orleans Darkwa. If you go back and you look at that play, first of all, Vinny Curry had an unbelievable jump on that play, Paul. And if you disagree, you disagree. By the time Darkwa gets the handoff, and tell me if I'm wrong, Paul.
It's right here.
Okay,
I'm showing it to you.
By the time Darkwa has the handoff, Curry is there. So if a fullback's in there and Darkwa sees that up the gut is not good, does he realistically have an opportunity to turn to his right? Left.
There were four Eagle linemen or linebackers. In fact, don't even identify them as what they were. There were four Eagles who were already across the line of scrimmage by the time Darkwa touched the ball. The penetration was just immediate.
So you have to take that into consideration. Even if a fullback's in, I think the play was doomed when all of a sudden the blockers got the better of the Giants' offensive line. And if you could go back and watch the play, I think you'll understand what Paul and I are alluding to, that when Darkwa gets the carry, there are all types of Eagles around him that he had no chance to even all of a sudden change the route of his run. Let's head back to the lines. Robin is in Atlanta. Robin, what's happening?
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for making it, Robin.
I actually just wanted to talk about the same play. But what I was thinking is because we had two receivers lined up on the left side and the right side.
There was one. No, on that play, there was one left and one right. I would say this. I'm just going to say it flat out, and I'm going to say it only because I'm so vocal about it all the time. I like a jumbo package in that situation, and if you really wanted to know where I would love to have seen DJ Fluker on the field, my goodness, I would love to have gone with the jumbo package and the extra offensive lineman at 350, 355 pounds, and I would love to have just bashed it behind the biggest two offensive linemen that I could put on the field. And I would have run it behind Flowers and Fluker behind the left side, and I would have dared the Eagles to try to push 700 pounds of beef backwards. That's what I would have done. All right? I'm just going to say it because I'm a big jumbo package guy. So that's what I would have done.
Yeah, But couldn't we have, like, kind of fake it? Because they already knew that we was going to run the ball. The way we lined up, they already knew. And the box and everything was full. So couldn't we fake it to either Marshall, I think Odell was on the other side?
Well,
let him cut in.
Ben did say on the conference call that he regretted the fourth down call because he thought they had a good one-on-one matchup on the edges, which says to me he was thinking they should have gone play action pass and then thrown the ball to one of the two receivers. That's him second-guessing himself and saying that's what he could have done. I understand it. Me being an old-school power football guy, I would have just lined up the beef and run behind the beef. That would have been me. But I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong. There are certainly many, many ways to skin
really
a cat.
Yep. So that's what I'm saying. Like, given the situation that, you know, we really can't run the ball, what kind of make you think we're going to get that 1 yard?
Well, it's 1 yard. I mean, granted, they have been able to pick up a yard, Robin. I understand the running game has struggled, but asking them to get a yard, I don't think is asking too much.
We can't get a yard though. Like,
well, listen, they have struggled. There were
how many times this season have we tried to get a yard?
Well, listen, there were four third and ones and third and twos that the Giants faced in total in the Eagles game. Mm-hmm. They converted one of those four downs. So your point is well taken. I don't disagree with you that this team has had trouble in short yarded situations, but I think the percentage is still in favor of you're on the inch line, you're inches away from the goal line to line up the personnel and ask them to win one play, one battle to punch it in. I still think under the circumstances, that's a high percentage play.
Yeah, and another thing, like, during practice, don't we practice those goal line stands? Like,
of course. Of course they do. That's situational football.
And
every
different
team
type,
does
yeah,
that.
Different type of scenarios and stuff.
Every team does that. Yeah. And appreciate the phone call, Robin. Thanks so much for weighing in. Do you want to add something from seeing it again?
I simply want to say as we continue to watch the play, and I've watched it over many, 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 many times, you know, Giants, they went double tight end. They had a receiver on each side. One lone setback. And the penetration was immediate. And Darkware had no chance at all. You know, you're going to tell me, well, they can't run it. Well, I'm going to say to you, if they had the extra beef and ran a jumbo package, how do you know that that wouldn't have worked? The Giants don't run a jumbo package. They haven't done it for years. I mean, seriously, it goes back to Jason Whittle, Richie Seibert. You know, those guys ran jumbo package with those guys. And that goes back to the old Giant Stadium. You know, before this one was built, they just don't do it. They did a little bit with David Deal when he was hurting. They did a little bit with
when they had Sean Locklear.
Sean Locklear.
He would come
he was
in
here
as
with
the
Deal.
Extra offensive
and,
lineman.
And actually, Locklear was the starter because remember, Deal had hurt his knee.
Yep.
Locklear became the starter, and then when Deal got healthy, he became
the swing
the jumbo.
Guy. Yeah.
He became the jumbo package guy. They did a little bit with him. You know, but over the last several years, that's not been part of what the Giants do. So if you want to tell me they can't get a yard on the ground, I'm going to say to you, well, maybe they can't with the kind of personnel they're using. How do you know they can't get it if they run jumbo? You can't tell me that because they haven't run it. That's my only comeback.
Charles is in New Mexico. Charles, what's happening?
Hey, real quick, guys. How are you today?
Doing all right, Charles.
Hi.
How's
hey, real
do?
Quick, so Fluker, you think Fluker's going to start this weekend?
We don't know that, but he's certainly going to be a consideration given the injury report that we were handed this morning.
You know, because I was thinking he'd be a starter from the start. So if he goes in there and all of a sudden the run game, I know Tampa Bay's hurt, but now we start running the ball. I mean, maybe McAdoo and Reese, according to all the articles I'm reading, and you guys are closer to it, and Paul, you've been around forever. Are they a little stubborn on this offensive line thing, you think?
Well, I think they really believe that they're just putting the best five guys out there that they can put out there on every given Sunday, and they're just going to work with it as best as possible, using the schemes to help them out, using the quick release to help them out. And I understand that because it's what you have. Let's face it. We've talked about it all season. There really weren't any choices outside of what they did with DJ Fluker. And of course, they got Wheeler off the rookie free agent list. And Bisnovati was drafted. There weren't a lot of really attractive choices. You kind of got to work with what you got.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's stop talking about the Philly game. Let's worry about Tampa Bay and get a big win this weekend because we really need it, all right?
I hear you.
Have a great afternoon.
All right, Charles, appreciate the phone call. When Ben McAdoo was asked about the offensive line recently, especially with Flowers and people questioning whether or not they need to make a change, he claimed that it's not about who's the best backup tackle and who the best tackle is.
Correct.
If you recall, Paul, it's who's the best five to put out there as an entire offensive line. And I'm paraphrasing his quote, but that was his main point that he wanted to get out there to the media.
And that goes all the way back to the Parcells era. Bill would always tell us, fellas, got to get my best five out there. And Brian Williams, who was a center by trade when he was drafted, played guard for the Giants. You know, William Roberts was drafted as a tackle, wound up becoming an all-pro guard for the Giants. I mean, you know, Bob Cratch was a swing guy, a guard, a tackle guy. He wound up playing guard for the Giants. You know, you play where you're needed. Luke Pettigrew was drafted, you know, to be, at one point, drafted to be a left tackle. Wound up playing some guard, wound up playing some tackle, wound up playing all over the line. This is what happens, you know. You get drafted with certain intentions, and then as you progress and go through the process, your coach figures out, who are my best five, and where can I play them? That's as old as Newt Rockne. I mean, I can't argue with that philosophy.
Yeah, no. I think the goal is you want to put your most talented players on the field, and they're evaluating them in practice every single day, and those are the five that they're confident in. So if a guy's not breaking through the starting five, I think that may say something about what perhaps they're seeing in practice. But when injuries happen, that changes the philosophy.
Sure it does.
We'll see what things play out with respect to Brett Jones, who is the late addition to the injury report with that hip injury. Well, for all the latest, stay locked to Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running each and every weekday, as usual, at noon Eastern. We appreciate everybody for tuning in. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.